Sign Language with Bruce Williams.
Hi, and welcome to episode 160 of Sign Language. Apologies for the lengthy delay once again. For those of you who listen to Shutters Inc., you would have heard about the ongoing dramas with my motorcycle. One of the downsides of the bike being off the road for the last 5 weeks has been slightly longer days, getting up earlier, getting home later, and that's kind of just made it a little more difficult to get the time to sit down and podcast. So, yeah, don't get me started on that bike. As soon as I get it back, it's going on the market. I've had a gutful. Really have. Anyway, the first email I got was from Ernie Barrett, and he said, "Hey Bruce, I understood everything you said, and you actually answered a question that I didn't know I needed answered. That is, the ADC being driven too hard, possibly. Sometimes when I record a voiceover, no matter how low I set my audio interface, even though my levels were as low as minus 15 dB in Audition, it still sounded like I was distorting my signal. And after looking at my preamp, a Behringer VX2000, and my line mixer, Fostex 2016, nothing was peaking."
Right, so I'm just going to jump in here, Ernie. There's a couple of things that come to mind. If the signal's distorting, but what you're getting in Audition is peaking at minus 15 dB, it could be that you're clipping the mic pre before going out to your line mixer. The other potential issue is that you're hitting the input to the ADC too hard, but you have set the input fader in the software interface of your sound card to be something less than unity gain. Now, the problem with doing that is you're trying to shut the gate after the horse has bolted, right? If the signal's too hot hitting the ADC, dragging the input fader down in software is too late. Damage has already been done. So that's a potential possibility. I really do not understand why manufacturers put input fader controls in the software interfaces of their audio hardware, because there is no time at which using those input sliders at anything other than unity gain makes any sense, right? Because it's always after the audio has hit the analog to digital converter. So if the signal was too hot, having a fader in software isn't going to help. All it's going to do is allow you to lower the level of an already clipped input signal. So that would be my first thing, is make sure that the input faders on the UI for your sound card are all set to unity gain. Then if the input is still hitting Audition too hot, you know that it's on the analog side and you need to back things off on the analog side. I hope that makes sense. So I shall continue with Ernie's email.
"My audio interface, to which I think you were referring to as the ADC."
Yes, that is correct. The audio interface essentially is the device which takes your analog signal and converts it into a digital signal, so therefore it is your analog to digital converter.
"Is a Lexicon Lambda. While it has 48 volt XLR, I just have the preamp hooked up line level. The reason I have a mic preamp is because I was trying to use a hardware amp for voice coloring and compression, as the VX2000 also has an opto compressor. The line mixer, while a lot of people use it for sidechain and aux sends, I use it as a rack-mounted mixer because it has 16 inputs, 32 depending on how you look at it. The reason is I also have radio scanners, shortwave radio, turntable, A-track, AM, FM radio, or whatever else I want hooked up to my ADC."
Right, so I think what you're saying there, Ernie, is that you are running your mic through your Behringer VX2000, you're taking a line level signal out of that, hopefully balanced, and that's going into the Fostex, hopefully balanced, and yeah, everything should be line level through the mixer. Okay, yeah, fair enough. Okay, we shall continue with Ernie Zima.
My audio interface has a monitor mix. When I listen to my voice on that, it sounds just fine. But when I go to record, I get the distortion. It's possible just the recording stage acts differently than the monitor stage, or that it's possibly bad or defunct.
Right, so that tends to suggest that what I was suggesting a moment ago might actually be the case. The monitor mix on any hardware device is generally listening to the analog inputs and feeding them straight to the headphone amplifier section of that audio interface. So the signal hasn't been through an analog to digital conversion and then a digital to analog conversion. It's just a straight analog path from the inputs on the back through to the headphone monitor section. So that would suggest that your gain staging prior to the Lexicon interface is okay, but you're driving the signal out of that, the digital side of that is going too hot into the sound card, and that you've possibly reduced the input fader in software, but as I said a moment ago, that's, you know, after the damage has been done. Love to hear back from you, Ernie, to see whether that's the case or whether there's more to this that we haven't sort of addressed yet. Anyway, on to the last part of his email.
I haven't played with it yet, but when I get home from work, I will. Maybe I just need to reduce all my amps, mixers, levels, and jack my input up on my ADC. Thanks for the help, Bruce. Yeah, I'm still around and I do listen to it all. I need to catch up on Shutters Inc. My love for photography is wearing thin because everyone with a phone thinks they're a damn photographer.
Yep, pretty much. Pretty much. I did also get an email from Greg Anderson about some of his field recording exploits. And I copied your email, Greg, into my little text document that I keep as my show notes for the podcasts. And I didn't notice that the field recording you'd done of the trains was actually a link to a file share. And I should have grabbed it because I didn't realize that there was a link there. I didn't grab it. And I went to grab it just now before I started recording. And it said that the file was no longer available. So I sent you a message on Facebook saying, hey, are you online at the moment? Obviously, you're not. So I will cover Greg's email in the next episode. Apologies, Greg. I was all prepared for it and then realized that I didn't have the audio. And then I thought, oh, where's the audio? Where's the audio? And, of course, then I went back to the email and found the link. And I thought, oh, okay, I'll just go grab it now. And, of course, it's already gone. So apologies for that, mate. And the third email I got was from Rob Bettler, and this was in response to an email that I'd sent to Rob saying, make sure you check out This Week in Google, episode 370. About an hour and 20 in, they were talking all about artificial intelligence and voice, well, what Rob has previously referred to as voice fonts, the idea of being able to take voice samples and by having small enough building blocks, being able to create amazing representations of the spoken word, not through synthesis, but through mapping of samples. I guess it's kind of the, you know, the difference between FM synthesis of a, you know, a trumpet versus using a sample of a trumpet, you know. I pick trumpet as a random instrument, but you know what I'm saying, right? The difference between FM synthesis, which is a completely artificially generated series of, you know, sine waves, square waves, triangle waves, all mixed together at varying levels and intensities so as to recreate the timbre of a given instrument, versus actually recording the real instrument and then using incredibly complex sample playback engines to create an attack, decay, sustain, release envelope for that instrument. And essentially, that's what this particular discussion on episode 370 This Week in Google was all about. And so to that, Rob replied.
Thank you for the amazing paper on WaveNet generative model of raw audio and the podcast above. The paper on WaveNet is just fascinating, mostly because I do not understand a flying about the math, but I am still having fun. And the fact that you can feed it raw audio, then it micromanages the prediction of the building of samples based on mere text is just amazing. It's almost as if you gave Google plain images of mountains, then asked to build perfectly convincing scenery out of a plain map, predicting how every stone or leaf would look. Naturally convincing. If you heard the samples that featured no text and produced breathy yet natural-sounding gibberish, which reminded me of this classic Italian song,
and I'll put a link in the show notes to it,
it only gave me the impression that if you could play those samples to people who speak zero English and convince them it was authentic speech, the same would be possible in all languages, minus the gibberish. Just imagine building perfect speech from the original voices without hiring living actors. Now, this concept truly has amazing applications for the movie and video game industry, such as feeding it cat sounds, then ask it to build eerie cat talk from text for a horror movie. Feeding it bone, rock, and echoey sounds, and then ask it to build Marvel's Ghost Rider's voice. Feeding it legendary voices, such as the late Leonard Nimoy, then ask it to build audiobooks from it. Feeding it thousands of hours of Bruce Williams' Leo Laporte podcasts and make them podcast in Chinese. Feeding it the best voices available, then ask it to improvise a voice that would never have existed and pay $0 for the rights. And many more things Red Bull has not yet whispered into my ear. Just imagine the millions and millions of dollars to be made from audiobook sales alone once someone secures the rights to the voice databanks of dead legends such as Orson Welles. This development truly changes my perspective because with the following paragraph just made me think of the possibilities. Similarly, we could provide additional inputs to the model, such as emotions or accents, to make the speech even more diverse and interesting. The fact they included that line of text above in their blog, with its implications, truly blows the mind. Not only for replacing TTS variants, yes, I know it's too expensive to produce WaveNet audio, but as processing power multiplies, so will the applications. Besides, an audiobook is recorded once, so the investment in renting WaveNet-like services to render a book instead of hiring voice talent may make sense. Just imagine Orson Welles or James Earl Jones speaking in pitch-perfect Chinese for the next installations of the Star Wars movies. Just imagine Darth Vader speaking in pitch-perfect versions of every language without the need of actors. If properly developed, this tool could ostensibly either generate perfect, succinct lines of dialogue or erase the need for the dubbing industry and its actors, because Anthony Hopkins would use his own voice to speak in Chinese, Portuguese, or Russian, as long as the mean opinion scores indicate people cannot tell the difference. There is a chance the dubbing industry will shrink and or disappear. Dude, I was so utterly and entirely mistaken. No need for a virtual larynx. Just go dot by dot, sample by sample. I'll come back to you with more ramblings as soon as I finish the paper or I buy more Red Bull, whichever happens first.
Thanks, Rob. Glad you enjoyed it, mate. As for the whole voice thing, what I imagine will happen is as that technology evolves, yes, the need for redubbing will diminish, but actors will have agents who will negotiate higher fees for them because of the fact that their voice is going to be, you know, reconstructed into all of these other languages. So essentially, they will get an additional fee for each language that their voice gets, you know, rendered into, just as though they were recording another performance. In the voiceover industry, you know, certainly from a radio point of view, we have rate cards from all of the voice agencies that we deal with. And those rate cards will say something like, you know, six various tracks for X number of dollars and Y number of dollars for every track thereafter. Okay. So, for example, it might be, you know, six tracks for $350 and every additional track is $50 after that, you know, or something like that. So I imagine that it will be something akin to that once this technology, you know, gets to a workable point and a, you know, financially feasible one from a technology point of view. The movie industry will certainly embrace it with both hands as soon as it's available. But, you know, the actors will then negotiate a higher rate of pay accordingly. That's my two cents on it anyway. And that's probably all anyone would pay for my voice. The whole thing about the older voices, like, you know, the Orson Welles, the thing I find not quite... I don't know that voices like that will necessarily get used as much, simply because they were never recorded with the types of fidelity that we now have, you know, the types of microphones and preamps and signal processing that we have today renders my voice to you in something very, very close to what you would hear if I was standing in the room talking to you. But the quality of microphones from, you know, back in the 40s and the 50s didn't have that sort of clarity and that kind of fidelity. So whether there's as much demand for, you know, those voices of yesteryear, I don't know. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe signal processing will get to a point where one day we'll be able to essentially take a sonic thumbprint of the output of a given microphone from that era and reverse engineer the input signal. I don't know if that's possible, but I'm just speculating here. It's an interesting theory, and I'm sure that somewhere there's some egghead working on it. You know, it wouldn't surprise me one little bit. All right, let's get on to another episode of The Dissection, shall we? This is a commercial that I made about five, maybe even 6 years ago now. And I was, I'll tell you how I found this. I was looking for, you know, another spot that I could use for a dissection. And so I just went to, you know, the archive folder on my machine at work, went to the 2010 folder, and I just did a search in Windows Explorer for all the NPR files, which is the file extension for Nuendo projects. And when my system had found a couple of thousand projects, I sorted them by size and figured that the ones which were bigger project files were probably likely to have more stuff going on. And so I only had to sort through, it was only about the second project I opened and I came across this, and it came back to me pretty quickly as to what it was. And this is something a little bit different. This is an ad for a place called Char Time, which is an Asian food outlet that does all different types of tea drinks, but not just hot tea drinks. Some of them are cold tea drinks, and they're all different styles and flavors and varieties and whatever. And I remember the girl who wrote it, Alyssa, she had this idea in mind of making a radio commercial that sounded like manga. Like the audio equivalent of manga. So she came up with this radical idea. And, yeah, thankfully she came in and sat with me and we worked on this together because I don't think my head was quite in the same space as hers was. But she, yeah, she had a very definite vision of what she wanted for it. And between us, we got to something that she was really happy with and the client was really happy with as well. So I shall give you a listen to the finished mix and then we'll start breaking it apart piece by piece. Here we go. Strap yourself in.
Beware the thirsty monster.
He lives inside you.
He is very hot
and very thirsty.
Who will save us from his angry roar?
Chartime Iced Tea!
Behold, I am Chartime Iced Tea. With super flavor, I bring love and make thirsty monster purr.
Defeat the evil thirsty monster. For a store near you, go to chartime.com.au.
Drink fresh.
Drink healthy.
Drink Chartime.
All right, like I said, something a little bit different. If you have a look at the screenshots that I've posted up, the first one is the music tracks with the automation. Not a heck of a lot there to look at, just some basic fader moves on the track titled Music 2. But the reason I did include that is because you'll notice there's a second automation lane, which is for send 1. And if you have a look in the right-hand side of the that screenshot, you'll see the channel settings for Music 2 is open. And send 1 is going to a reverb. And when you look at the automation lane, you can see that it's at a nil value, or you know, minus infinity for the majority of the ad. And then right at the end, I've manually drawn a fade up on that send. So the idea there was that the music would play all the way through the commercial exactly the way it came from the production music library that I used. However, there wasn't a nice cold ending to the piece of music the way I wanted. So what I'll quite often do in an instance like that is I'll cut the music on the one beat. So you get the one beat and then, you know, the music is cut off almost instantaneously. But you automate a reverb send just before that one beat. And what that does is it gives the impression of the music having come to a natural end, right? Because generally, musicians will play, you know, in 4-4 music, you'll generally play, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, and you finish, right? So by having, you know, the cut just after the one beat, but having that reverb send, you know, applied to the music just before the one beat, it causes that one beat to get reverberated through the plugin, and it just kind of, it's a cheat's way of creating a cold ending to a piece of music. So that's why I've included that screenshot. If we then move on to screenshot number 2, this is the automation for the first 3 voices which appear in this commercial. The first voice is Amy. The second one is Rachel, and the third voice is a guy called Pizza. You'll notice on Rachel's voice track there is a little bit of automation of the panning, where for most of the track she's in the middle, but for one section she's panned a little bit to the left. And during that section there is also a send, which is going to a reverb. You can't see that because I don't have the settings for that track open as a window in that screenshot. On Pizza's voice track, he's mostly on the left, but then during that section where his voice occurs at the same time as Rachel's, he's panned to the right. So they're sort of bouncing off each other in the left and the right channels. Oh, I just realized there's 2 different voice tracks dedicated to Pizza's voice. So I obviously had him overlapped. And you can see there's some panning on the second track. There's a reverb send happening. And there's a limiter on his second voice track. I don't recall why I did that. Obviously, I needed to boost him in level for some reason, but yeah, there you go. If we then go to the third screenshot, this is the automation for voices 4 through 6. which is Pete's... Oh, that's his second voice track again. Then there's a guy called PJ, and then finally Joe Van S, who doesn't look like there was any automation for Joe's voice track at all. If we then go and have a look at the next screenshot, we're looking at the effects tracks, that is the tracks which had sound effects on them, for tracks 1, 2, and 3. And we can see that the first one I called Fresh, second one was Gliss, third one was Behold. And you can see what the various automation channels are there. There's volume for Fresh. For Gliss, there was volume and a send, and that send one again would have been to the reverb. Behold, again, same thing, volume and reverb send. And then the fourth track, which will actually appear on the next screenshot for effects tracks 4 through 7, we've got the Roar and Purr. And you can see I did a fairly aggressive volume automation there to fade that out. Then there was the Bubbles track. And you can tell by the randomness of the dots in the automation lane that they were not hand-drawn automation envelopes. They were automation envelopes that were actually done using the Mackie Control Universal and writing the fader. And so the software is writing in the dots according to how much you move a physical fader. The hand-drawn envelopes tend to be, you know, the straight lines between two dots that are spaced quite a long way away from each other. Then there's the Kiss, then there's a reverse sound effect, and if we go to the next screenshot, we've got effects tracks 8 through 10, which included the Monster 1 and Monster 2, the Screech, and then we go to the next screenshot, we've got effects tracks 11 to 13, which was the Drone, Steam, the Panting. And what have we got? Oh my God, more effects tracks. Tracks 14 and 15. So we've got the Gong and Gong 2. Okay, so as you can see, there was quite a lot going on in this mix. The next screenshot is the automation on the group tracks. Now, the groups that I have, and you can see them in that screenshot on the right-hand side of the mixer, are the VO submix and the FX submix. So basically, I think I've explained my basic template in the past, where all of the tracks that are going to have voices on them, I route to a common bus, which I call VO submix. And that way I can apply compression and peak limiting to that whole submix using just, you know, one plug-in of each, you know, a compressor and a peak limiter. I can get away with that methodology simply because all of the voice tracks that I work with, I've recorded in my studio. So I'm not having to work with voice tracks that have come from different engineers, different studios, different hardware setups, some that are unprocessed, some that are already processed. Everything I've got is unprocessed. So I'm quite comfortable with running all of my voice tracks through a common submix and just having one compressor and one peak limiter working across all of the voices evenly. Obviously, there are occasions where I do want to process one voice a little more heavily, as in Pizza's voice track, which we saw in one of those earlier screenshots, where I applied a peak limiter simply to his voice. Obviously, I just needed to really crunch him up and get him louder in the mix. Okay, so moving on to the next screenshot, this is the effects bus plugins. So my effects bus is the reverb bus and the delay bus. And we can see that on there I've got a Waves Renaissance reverb on the reverb bus, and I've got the stock delay plugin that ships with Nuendo on the delay bus. So basically, wherever I needed a reverb, I was using send one to send into that reverb effects bus. And, you know, according to how much level I drive into the bus from any given track, that will determine how much reverb is generated for that particular input signal. Same with the delay. All right, let's move through here. The next screenshot is the Master Bus plugins, and again, this is a Waves Renaissance Compressor and the L1 Master plugin. This was obviously long before we got the L2 and L3 limiters, which I have these days. These days I use the L316 as my final peak limiter, but obviously back then in 2010 or whenever it was that I made this commercial, the L1 was what I was using. And you can see that the output ceiling is set to -1, but the threshold is set to -13.1. So basically, as I've explained in the past, I will apply whatever compression I think it needs, and I will then bring down the threshold of my peak limiter until my trusty little VU meter plugin down there in the bottom right-hand corner is showing me signal sitting pretty much around 0 VU. And that way I know that my mix is going to reconstruct well in the analog domain when it's played back. Okay, let's move on, because the next screenshot is the effects plugins applied just to Amy's voice. Now, I'm going to play you the next little piece of audio, and this is just the short grab of Amy's voice, which you can see highlighted in blue in the timeline in that screenshot. So the first version of her voice is basically without any processing. This is how it sounds.
Drink chat time.
And then if you have a look at the plug-in windows that are open, there is a tremolo and a vibrato. So if we now have a listen to her voice with those two plugins active, we get this.
Drink chat time.
Okay, so it just puts a little bit of a wobble to her voice. The next piece of voiceover is just Rachel's voiceover, and I've taken the 20 seconds of dead air out just so that you can hear her voice unprocessed, or, yeah, well, there were no plugins running on Rachel's voice, so this is her voice track.
Who will save us from his angry roar? Chat time iced tea.
Drink fresh.
Okay, so next up is Pizza's voice tracks, and if you have a look at the next screenshot, you can see the effect plugins that were running on his voice. I had his own dedicated instance of the Renaissance Reverb. Obviously, I was after something specific for his voice here, and the aforementioned L1 peak limiter just to give his voice track a bit of boost in the mix. So let's have a listen to his voice track with all the automation running, so you'll hear his voice panning around. Here we go.
Beware the thirsty monster.
He lives inside you.
He is very hot
and very thirsty.
Chat time iced tea.
Drink healthy.
Okay, so you can hear some of those lines are processed differently to other lines, and that's where you noticed in that earlier screenshot that I had Pizza 1 and Pizza 2. So only Pizza 2 is going through that reverb, and I deliberately chose a very, you know, metallic reverberant type of reverb, almost like he was inside a water tank. It was just all about creating this really totally random sound for this whole commercial. You know, this whole commercial, it didn't really fit any, yeah, there were no guidelines for this. It was so, you know, out of left field. So you could pretty much do anything and it was acceptable, you know, because it just kind of, it was like all bets were off. The crazier, the better. So that was generally the approach. Okay, so next up we've got PJ's voice track, which sounds like this.
Defeat the evil thirsty monster. For a store near you, go to chartime.com.au.
Okay, next up we've got Joe Van Ness's voice track, which was kind of like the main body of voiceover within this commercial. And again, I've used that tremolo and vibrato effect. You can see it in the next screenshot. So this is running over her voice track. And although Joe did an absolutely fantastic job of rolling the R on purr at the end of her, you know, little piece of voice track, the vibrato and tremolo really add to that, and you'll hear it. Here we go.
Behold, I am Chartime Iced Tea. With super flavor, I bring love and make thirsty monster purr.
Okay, so next up we start listening to the various sound effects. This is Fresh. Then we've got Gliss. Then we've got Behold. Next up, we've got the Purr. And then we've got the Bubbles. And the Kiss. And the Reverse. Then we've got the Monster, and this, if you noticed in the screenshots, was actually comprised of two different sounds layered together. This is the first one. And this is the second one. So as you can hear, that was like a cougar or something with some reverb added to it. Next up, we've got the Screech. I don't even remember what that sound was. It was obviously something pretty random, and it sounds like I've added reverb to it as well. I really don't remember what it was I used. Okay, next up is the Drone. Next up is the Steam Hiss. Then we've got the Panting. Then we've got the Gong, and again, this was made up of two different gong sound effects. That was the first one. This is the second one. And when you put them together, you get something that sounds like this. Okay, so that's all of the elements. Now I will play you the voiceover submix with all of its automation happening, but with everything else muted. Here we go.
Beware the thirsty monster.
He lives inside you.
He is very hot
and very thirsty.
Who will save us from his angry roar?
Chartime Iced Tea!
Behold, I am Chartime Iced Tea. With super flavor, I bring love and make thirsty monster purr.
Defeat the evil thirsty monster. For a store near you, go to chartime.com.au.
Drink fresh.
Drink healthy.
Drink Chartime.
Okay, and then this is the music submix with the automation, so listen out for the reverb send at the end. Okay, it's probably not as noticeable as I thought it was, and it's probably one of those things where it was just subtle enough that it worked, but it was buried under all of the voice tracks, and you know, I probably could have got away with not even bothering with the reverb bit. Anyway, and the final piece is the effects submix with all of its automation by itself. Here we go. All right, and you put it all together and you get the full mix which we started with. I'll play it for you one more time.
Beware the thirsty monster.
He lives inside you.
He is very hot
and very thirsty.
Who will save us from his angry roar?
Chartime Iced Tea!
Behold, I am Chartime Iced Tea. With super flavor, I bring love and make thirsty monster purr.
Defeat the evil
thirsty monster.
For a store near you, go to chartime.com.au.
Drink fresh.
Drink healthy.
Drink Chartime.
All right, that will do it for this episode. Please, as per usual, any questions, comments, feedback, please drop me an email, studio@audiotu.com. And until I speak with you next, take care.
Sign Language.
Another audiotou.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email studio@audiotou.com.